ride.
Good morning, everybody. Good morning, all you magnificent melonheads of the world. Happy Tuesday, everybody. Today is June 16th, 2026. And our top story again this morning is SpaceX. Not only is this stock ripping, the company has surpassed $2.5 trillion in market cap just a few days after their IPO, now up almost 50% from their IPO price. But we've also got the news this morning that SpaceX is buying Anysphere. And Anysphere is the parent company of Cursor. Cursor is the AI coding tools. It's a competitor slash complement to Anthropic's Claude. And they're buying this company for $60 billion in stock. And so I've got two questions here. The first question is why? All right, I hear a lot about Cursor's growth. Oh my God, the growth is so amazing. I don't care about revenue growth. The purpose of business is to make money. And Cursor doesn't make money. They actually lose money. Go figure, somebody in the AI space losing money. But they don't just lose a little money. They lose a lot of money. Cursor lost $900 million last year on $770 million in revenue. All right, so let's do some quick math. 900 over 770. So yeah, they've negative 116% profit margins for Cursor. But don't worry, we make up for it in volume. So why would you buy? Why would a company that already loses money buy another company that loses money even faster? All right, well, it's the AI bubble. Sooner or later, people are going to care about valuations and losing money, but it's not this day. Right, that's my first question, why? My second question is, what does this mean for Anthropic? Because this is pretty interesting, and I got to send a shout out to Ed Zitron. We're going to see some of his work later on in the show. Ed Zitron has done a pretty good job documenting Cursor's business model. Cursor is Anthropic's single biggest customer. I mean, almost every dollar of Cursor's revenue just goes directly to Anthropic. All right. So now their biggest customer is owned by one of their biggest competitors. So that can't be good for Anthropic. It doesn't sound good for Anthropic. And also keep in mind that Anthropic just signed a deal to rent SpaceX's data centers for $15 billion annually. They're renting the entirety of this Colossus data center that they built down in New Orleans or down in Louisiana. So if Anthropic's biggest customer is now owned by the company that they're renting the data center from, it stands to reason that Anthropic actually may not need that data center rental anymore, which means SpaceX will probably, instead of renting it to Anthropic, just rent it to their own subsidiary, now Cursor. What does that mean for SpaceX's revenue? What does that mean for Anthropic's substantial growth in annualized revenue if potentially their biggest customer is no longer using their compute? So those are my two big questions. Number one, why? And number two, what does this mean for the Anthropic IPO? So that's why this is our top story this morning. Other news going on this morning, we got another AI story about Microsoft. There's a shareholder lawsuit was just filed against Microsoft yesterday. Now, this is interesting. It's not terribly rare. Shareholder lawsuits happen all the time. So I don't want to make too big a deal out of this, but there's some nuance to this story that's important. First of all, it's a police and firefighter pension for the city of St. Clair, Michigan that filed this lawsuit. And get used to that. Pension funds targeting hyperscalers and AI companies for misleading comments. And that's the next point about this. Is that the lawsuit is about false or misleading statements in earnings reports about Azure's cloud growth while simultaneously downplaying concerns about their AI investments. Huh, that's interesting. So they're being sued by a pension fund for making false or misleading statements about their growth while simultaneously downplaying how much money they were spending. All right. Guys, this is pretty much what I've been warning about for the last several years, hasn't it? That this kind of crap was going to happen and that it ultimately was going to be retirees holding the bag. So get ready. You're going to see a lot more lawsuits like this in the future and not just Microsoft. Also, we got some interesting inflation data came out today. We got U.S. export and import prices just came out. For the month of May, export prices were up 11.2% versus a year ago. You better believe that's oil, right? We also had a big jump in export prices back in March of 8% and change. The month-over-month increase wasn't as big this time, but the year-over-year numbers tend to be additive. So, yeah, 11.2%. Now you understand why producer prices are rising so fast, why CPI is trending in the wrong direction. And we got the same thing in import prices, not quite as bad as exports, but we also import a lot of oil, and we import a lot of tech hardware, too, for this data center build-out. U.S. input prices rose by six, import prices rose by 6.7% for the month of May. So exports getting more expensive, imports getting more expensive, all the things in between getting more expensive. Get used to higher PPIs and CPIs. I know there's a lot of like relief and everyone's like, oh, the Iran deal, and it's going to be great and inflation's going to stop. It's going to take a while. All right. That energy shock is still working its way through the system, still driving prices higher. And just because a bunch of guys said that there's going to be a deal for the 40th time, and hey, that's a lucky round number. Maybe 40 is the one that gets us across the finish line. That doesn't necessarily mean that these price shocks that are already working their way through the system aren't going to reach us. They are. And along those lines, we've got the Bank of Japan has hiked interest rates by 25 basis points this morning. That's just a few days after the European Central Bank hiked interest rates for the first time in several years. And coincidentally, just as we kick off the first day of Kevin Warsh's first FOMC as Fed chair. That meeting starts today, and we'll have our first Kevin Warsh press conference tomorrow. And there's an article in the Wall Street Journal talking about getting used to a quieter Fed. Some of the changes Kevin Warsh is expected to make is he's going to talk less. There's going to be a lot less jawboning, which means these ridiculous headlines of, oh, this Fed governor said this thing at some conference in some city. There's going to be a lot less of that, which means the market's going to have to just trade on its own fundamentals. I know, what a concept. Markets trading on price discovery, supply and demand, you know, that kind of shit. Companies making money instead of, oh, central banker said thing, therefore algorithms buy. It also might mean more volatility because when the Fed does move, it'll be more of a surprise. We got some economic data in China this morning. Not good. Consumer spending and investment both fell to the lowest levels since the pandemic in China. Consumer spending, obviously, that's your retail spend there, and fixed asset investment, that's your construction. Both of those falling at the same time, guys, that is your housing market in China. And apparently it is getting worse, and it's accelerating to the downside as it goes. Also going on this morning, Taiwan is easing regulations to let life insurers invest in AI projects. And that might seem like a no, never mind kind of story, but you better believe that is yet another government blowing air into the AI bubble. Taiwan has been one of the key beneficiaries of the AI bubble, as Taiwan Semiconductor is where all these chips are made. We're starting to worry about there may not be enough money in the whole freaking world to keep this bubble inflated. And so they're doing off-balance sheet debt, special purpose vehicles, they're issuing bonds, they're issuing stock. And now we've got Taiwan has said, life insurers, if you want to invest your money in this crap too, well, you guys can go ahead. And last but not least, U.S. housing starts. That data just came out this morning. Not a statistic we usually cover, but a big drop in housing starts. As a matter of fact, the lowest since May of 2020. Some weakness in home builders being shown in the data today. Guys, we got a lot to talk about. Once again, why don't we shrink my big melon of a head and let's see what's going on in the world of finance today. Don't forget that like button, and you new guys hit that subscribe button so you can come have your coffee with the melon heads as we go through markets every single business day. There's the SpaceX ticker. We'll get to that in just a second. But first, the S&P 500 is unchanged this morning, 70 or basically plus or minus none points. It's going nowhere. The Dow is doing a little bit better here, up by 149 points or 0.29% in the green. And the NASDAQ is lower by 43 points or 0.14%. Stocks going a whole bunch of nowhere this morning. Looks like the NASDAQ didn't like some of that data that came out earlier this morning. We'll get to that in a minute. The DXY is currently lower by 4 basis points, 99.63 for the Dixie. Not a lot happening in the dollar this morning. And we've got a little bit of movement in bonds here. The 30-year yield is down by 2.5 basis points at 4.945%. The 10-year yield is at 4.439, also down by 2.5 points. The 2-year is at 4.060, lower by 0.5 point. And the 1-month is at 3.650, lower by 1.5 points. Looking over at Bitcoin, it's pretty much unchanged from yesterday, $66,150, shown here down by about 125 bucks or 0.19% from yesterday as priced on Coinbase. Looking over at the commodities board, we've got metals are higher once again, probably because gold is or oil is lower. $4,343 for spot gold. That's higher by $33, almost 34, 0.79% in the green. Spot silver back above 70 bucks here, $70.57. That's higher by 58 cents or 0.85%. I like this shiny. Copper is higher by about a third of a percent. Platinum is higher by 2.7%. Palladium's up by 0.9%. And WTI crude down again here, $77.59 for July WTI futures. We've got that seven handle back, lower by $3 or 3.84% on more jawboning, more prospects for peace in the Middle East. Again, we still don't have the text of the deal. There's 100 different versions of it flying around. Plenty of commentary. I'll believe it when I see it. Supposedly Friday, they will sign on the dotted line. But here is the big one going on this morning. SpaceX to buy AI coding startup Cursor for $60 billion in enterprise push. Elon Musk's SpaceX said on Tuesday it would acquire Anysphere, the software firm behind the popular artificial intelligence coding agent Cursor, for $60 billion in a bid to ramp up its presence in the enterprise AI market. The announcement comes just days after Musk took his rockets to AI company public in a blockbuster NASDAQ debut that valued the firm at more than $2 trillion, immediately making it one of the world's most valuable companies. SpaceX said it expects to close the merger during the third quarter of 2026. SpaceX had been eyeing Cursor for several months. The company said in April that it had secured an option to either acquire the San Francisco-based Cursor for $60 billion later this year or pay $10 billion for their new partnership. Along with OpenAI and Anthropic, Cursor is one of several Silicon Valley startups that have drawn waves of developers by using AI to automate coding, a business in which AI companies have found early commercial traction. It was not immediately clear if the deal would affect SpaceX's agreements to rent out its data centers. The company has in recent weeks struck deals with Anthropic and Alphabet, owned Google, to lease cloud computing capacity worth roughly $26 billion annually. Both deals include 90-day termination clauses, meaning SpaceX could quickly reclaim computing capacity if needed. All right, so why would SpaceX need to reclaim computing capacity? And why might Anthropic not need it anymore? For that, we're going to go to this post from Ed Zitron back in September of 2025. Why everybody is losing money on AI. And by the way, the Ed Zitron Substack, Where's Your Ed At, is fantastic, by the way. I've been reading this one for a while. He does excellent deep dives on the finances of the AI bubble. And it's this paragraph in particular where I want to zoom in here. Anysphere is a company that sells a subscription to their AI coding app, Cursor. And said app predominantly uses compute from Anthropic via their models Claude Sonnet 4.1 and Opus 4.1. Per Dom Doten at Newcomer, Cursor sends 100% of their revenue to Anthropic, who then takes that money and puts it into building out Claude Code, a competitor to Cursor. Cursor is Anthropic's largest customer. Cursor is deeply unprofitable and was that way even before Anthropic chose to add service tiers, jacking up prices for enterprise apps like Cursor. By the way, all of this was in September of 2025, all of this was before token-based billing, which I'm sure took Cursor's losses and just exploded them higher. So that's pretty interesting. Now that one of Anthropic's biggest customers is owned by one of their biggest competitors, what does that mean for Anthropic? It can't be good for Anthropic. And also keep in mind that when they were talking about this is how much money they were losing, we also got this post from Ed Zitron. This was back in April of this year. Cursor made roughly $770 million in revenue in 2025 and lost nearly $900 million. And keep in mind, that was before token-based billing. Yet they raised over $3 billion in that period and needed another $2 billion before the SpaceX acquisition. Something doesn't add up. I believe that another $2 billion he's referring to there is a funding round that SpaceX was attempting to do back in, not SpaceX, that Cursor was doing back in April. They raised another $2 billion. Why did they need all this money? Probably because the transition at the beginning of the year to token-based billing at Anthropic means Cursor's losses went from already horrible, right? Negative 120% margins. And then you throw token-based billing on top of that. Cursor was probably bleeding to death. This company probably wouldn't have survived if SpaceX didn't come in and buy them up. Now, SpaceX has all these data centers that they have nothing to do with because Grok is pretty much worthless. And so they're buying this loss-making company to try to figure out something to do with their data centers. Again, I just don't know what this means for Anthropic and why on earth would SpaceX do this. But look, SpaceX stock is doing fantastic here. $200.90. This thing just IPO'd Friday at $135. It's up 50% from its IPO valuation already. So the people who got in on the SpaceX IPO have done really well so far. And then look at that valuation. As of the close yesterday, $2.52 trillion in market cap. It's up another 4.5% ahead of the opening bell, which means this is a $2.6 trillion company now. They are closing in on Amazon's valuation here. All right. A lot of news from them. And in a preview of things to come, we've got our first AI bubble lawsuit from a pension fund. Microsoft accused of misleading investors on cloud growth and AI spending in shareholder lawsuit. This was just yesterday. Microsoft has been accused in a shareholder lawsuit of defrauding and misleading investors about slowing growth in its Azure cloud unit and plans to spend heavily on AI infrastructure. The proposed class action lawsuit, which was filed in the federal district court in Seattle on Friday, alleged that Microsoft made false or misleading statements in several earnings reports, conference appearances, and during its annual shareholder meeting. According to the lawsuit, the company cited its Azure cloud business as a key growth driver while downplaying concerns about its AI investments, in turn boosting its stock price to all-time highs. The proposed class period runs from May 1st of 2025 to January 28th, 2026, when the company disclosed fiscal second quarter results that sent its stock sliding. It hasn't recovered from that either. In that quarter, Microsoft logged 39% revenue growth for its Azure and other cloud businesses, down sequentially. The company also reported a jump in capital expenditures from the prior year quarter. The lawsuit accused the company of knowing or recklessly disregarding that the public documents and statements it issued during the period were materially false and misleading. The lawsuit was led by the City of St. Clair Shores Police and Fire Retirement System, a pension fund based in Michigan. A Microsoft spokesperson said the company is aware of the complaint and believes that the claims are without merit. So we've got our first pension fund suing a hyperscaler over misleading growth statistics and downplaying concerns over AI spending. Well, just remember, guys, nobody saw this coming. All right, let's talk about some of this import and export data we got here, guys. This is United States export prices year over year. And that came in really high this morning, 11.2% growth in export prices. The stuff we are selling is getting a hell of a lot more expensive. And what are we selling a lot of right now? Well, oil. We're selling a ton of oil, and we're selling it for quite a bit. I know oil prices have fallen sharply in the last few days, but during the month of May, they were pretty expensive. Same goes for April, and that's why we've had this big growth in export prices year over year since the start of the Iran war. But it's not all good news that our exports are going up, because our imports are going up as well. May import prices up 6.7% year over year. Remember, guys, even though the trade deficit is shrinking, we import still a hell of a lot more than we export. So the stuff, just about everything we buy, getting more expensive, 6.7% after rising 4.2% in April. All this means more inflation is on the horizon. And we got some data to that effect and some headlines to that effect, starting with this one from the Bank of Japan. Raises rates to a 31-year high and flags more to come. The Bank of Japan raised interest rates to a 31-year high on Tuesday in a landmark step in its policy normalization, signaling readiness to tighten further as it focuses on taming prices pressures from the Iran war-induced energy shock. The hike was the first since December and aligns the BOJ with other central banks shifting towards tighter policy to combat inflation, including the European Central Bank. In a widely expected move, the BOJ raised its short-term policy rate to 1% from 0.75%, taking borrowing costs to levels unseen since 1995. And that just goes to show you how amazing the easy money and the modern monetary theory really was in Japan. All right, this is a 31-year high at 1%. Is a 31-year high. That is how ridiculously low interest rates in Japan were. Taking into account that medium and long-term inflation expectations have also continued to increase, There's a risk of underlying inflation deviating above our price target, the BOJ said in explaining the move. So they're more worried about inflation. They're not getting caught up in the headlines about deals in the Strait of Hormuz. They're raising rates to fight inflation. And as that's going on, keep one eye on the Japanese yen, guys, because it's still sitting up here at 160. And the last time we were at 160 is when we got this big red candle here. That is the BOJ, or not the BOJ, the finance ministry intervening in the Japanese Forex market to prop up the yen. We're right back to that level here. So you got hiking rates. You got a currency that is right at a resistance level where historically the finance ministry or the central bank intervenes. Keep one eye on Japan as we go through these other stories here. We also got to talk about central banks here in the States. The prospect of a quieter Fed could roil bond prices. Warsh has hinted at less communication from the central bank. This is a little bit of a doomy headline, to be honest with you. Bloomberg saying, oh, without more constant commentary and jawboning from the Fed, the bond market could be roiled. Yes and no. Maybe the bond market needs to focus less on what's being said day to day by central bankers and more on what's going on in the underlying economy. And maybe that's actually a good thing. But let's talk about it. For the past couple of decades, the central bankers who've run the Fed have provided more and more information about their thinking and setting monetary policy. Kevin Warsh looks to start reversing that trend, and the result could be more sudden swings in the bond market. The new chairman, who takes charge of his first interest rate meeting this week, has promised an overhaul of communications. The Fed tries too hard to provide a roadmap of its plans, he said, and policymakers speak quite frequently. Bond investors are wondering if the Warsh Fed will slim down the quarterly summary of economic projections, which includes forecasts for key economic variables and the famous dot plot showing policymakers' predictions for where interest rates are headed. Torsten Slock of Apollo Global Management reckons that policy statements could get much shorter. Cindy Beaulieu at asset manager Conning thinks Warsh would like to do fewer press conferences and drop the dot plot. Warsh argues that central banks need to preserve flexibility and avoid the perception that they're locking themselves into commitments that might not fit changed circumstances, but less communication carries risk. You've got to be careful pulling back on communication, said William English, a former secretary of the Federal Open Market Committee. Doing it too sharply would be bad for the effectiveness of monetary policy and could lead to more decisions that are surprises that cause volatility in financial markets, according to Maria Aloysa and Michael McKenzie. So a quieter Fed, again, a central bank doing less of anything has got to be a good thing. Talking less, and again, maybe even doing less, don't threaten me with a good time. But I think it's been silly how the market has just hung on the every word of Jerome Powell or any of these other guys at the Fed for several years. So in my opinion, this is a step in the right direction, although they are right. It does bring volatility risk that the Fed could make a surprise move that markets don't have priced in ahead of time. All right, we also got some economic data from China here. Chinese economy stalls as spending and investment drop to COVID-era levels. The housing market in China is bad, and it is spilling over into the wealth effect, affecting how people shop. China's consumer spending and investment slumped to levels unseen since the pandemic, exposing risks for the economy even as it benefits from booming exports and a de-escalation of tensions around Iran. Retail sales declined 0.6% last month from a year ago, posting a worse-than-forecast drop that was their first fall since the reopening from COVID lockdowns in late 2022. Home prices fell at a quicker pace in May, and fixed asset investments shrank a deeper-than-expected 4.1% in the first 5 months from a year ago. That's according to data released by the National Bureau of Economic Statistics on Tuesday. All three of these numbers, guys, are the housing market, all right? The 6% drop in retail sales, that is the wealth effect. When people's homes go down in value, they shop less. That is a well-documented psychological phenomenon. That's a part of the human condition. And home prices have been falling in China for years now. People are shopping less. So that's why you get the retail sales decline. Fixed asset investment falling down, that is less buildings getting built. The developers going bankrupt and getting liquidated, that has not stopped since the housing bubble started to burst in 2021 in China. And so you're seeing it in the investment data. And of course, home prices fell at a quicker pace in May. That's no surprise there as well. It's the housing market is the problem. Now, silver lining for the Chinese, in contrast to the weakness on the demand side, industrial production climbed 4.5%, up from 4.1% in April. slightly better than forecast. So we have talked a lot about overproduction in China, how they've produced so many EVs. Chinese exports have surged because they produce so many EVs. They lowered their prices and they sent them overseas. So that's helping on the industrial production side. But that retail number, that fixed investment, not good for the Chinese economy. And Taiwan is blowing into the AI bubble this morning. Taiwan frees life insurers to deploy capital in AI projects. And again, this is all about figuring out where that next bump, where is that next fix going to come from for the AI bubble? Well, they're trying government bailouts. They're trying off-balance sheet debt. Why not give Taiwanese life insurers a go? Taiwan is easing regulations to give life insurers flexibility to invest in AI projects, part of an ongoing campaign by authorities to redirect a larger slice of the industry's $1 trillion asset pool back home. And, you know, if that money gets spent on AI projects and the AI projects buy chips that are made in Taiwanese factories, and, oh, hey, look, this is round-tripping on a national level. Well, that's just totally coincidental. The Financial Supervisory Commission will amend rules to allow life insurance companies to deploy capital directly into AI-linked investment projects, the regulator said in a statement. The move is designed to support government efforts to accelerate technology infrastructure and advance Taiwan's vision of becoming a smart technology island, because apparently Taiwan is not already a smart technology island. Okay. In tandem with the AI push, the FSC will lift the investment ceiling for insurers looking to back certified domestic private equity funds. Life insurance companies will be permitted to hold up to 25% of a fund's issued shares or paid in capital, up from the current 20% limit. So we've also got that phenomenon of private equity companies buying life insurers and then saddling those companies with assets derived from their own book holdings. That's fun. Together, the regulator revisions aim to achieve a policy goal of utilizing the insurance sector's massive capital base for local development and retaining local wealth rather than seeing it flow to international markets. You know, call me old-fashioned, but I always thought that the insurance sector's massive capital base existed for the benefit of the insurance company's customers and the profit margins of the insurance company, not for retaining local wealth or pushing investment in stuff that explodes and kills people like they're doing in Europe with the defense sector, not for private equity firms propping up their own worthless books. I always thought insurance companies had these big asset books, you know, for the benefit of their policyholders. I guess I'm just old-fashioned, guys. Maybe I need to be a little more modern in my thinking. Last but not least, United States housing starts. Rough data in the real estate sector here in the States. U.S. housing starts fell 15.4% month on month in May, reaching a seasonally adjusted annual rate of 1.177 million. That is the lowest since May of 2020. Yikes. Following a downwardly revised 1.392 million in April and well short of market forecasts of 1.43 million. The sharp decline signals that high mortgage rates are dampening builder activity. And look at this, 1.18 down from 1.39, 1.51 before that. The lowest we've seen, again, in a long time. You got to zoom out 10 years. And then here's that May of 2020 number and April of 2020. That was the last time the numbers were lower than we are here for housing starts. Builders are in trouble here. If they're slowing down building, that would suggest their inventory is rising, their profit margins are slimming out. I mean, we know it's getting more expensive. Labor's getting more expensive. Materials are, and certainly energy is. But home builders showing the pain here. Big decline in housing starts. That's not going to help with the frozen housing market, not even a little bit. And guys, I just want to say thank you very much for having your coffee with the Melonheads this morning. Don't forget that like button and that subscribe button for you new guys. You can come back tomorrow and have your coffee with us. Thank you as well to my magnanimous Melonheads on YouTube, Patreon, and Buy Me a Coffee for supporting the channel. Links down below should you feel so inclined. Hi, Mom. Hi, Dad. Love you guys. Everybody, till next time, live small and dream big.